Well, 30 years. Thank you. I said that Mass, it was Tuesday, was the day, St. Barnabas Day, but it's only by the grace of God, believe me. I could have never done it. I'm sure people in my high school would be amazed that I even became a priest, but that's another story for another day. But 30 years of listening to confessions and sins, I'll tell you, it's been quite an experience. Nobody comes anymore. What happened to sin? There was a book out not too long ago, well, actually a long time ago now, I think about it, about 15 years ago, Whatever Became of Sin by a psychologist. But yeah, Whatever Became of Sin. Well, my best confession was, I think it was an 8-year-old boy around that. It was in fairly one of his earlier confessions where they parade in the children, you know, in religious education class, and they have them go in. And back then, 30 years ago, of course, I don't think we had the option of going either face-to-face or through the screen, but I can remember this young boy coming in saying, "Father, you know, I've sinned so many, bless me, Father, for I've sinned." He learned the formula, and then he said, "I committed adultery 7 times. And I said, "Whoa, right there, stop it. What do you mean by adultery? You're 8 years old." You know, I didn't say that to him, "You're 8, but I said, what is adultery, by the way? I forgot what it is." And he said, "Well, I don't obey my adults." So he doesn't obey his adults. Well, that's not adultery, yeah? But you'll learn. I'm not going to teach you here. So anyhow, it's been quite a journey. But I want to talk about sin today. I mean, I never get a chance to talk about sin. It's because because Jesus, in a lot of ways, as I've mentioned, Jesus transcends religion. He was trying to get us to a higher consciousness. He wasn't into sin, punishment, all that kind of stuff. He was trying to get us to move into a higher consciousness, a Christ consciousness. And he calls us out of fear. He calls us out of separation. He calls us out of alienation into unity and into love. And that's what his message was. It was a universal message for all. And so, but at a major juncture at St. Anselm's classic theological treatise, which I'm sure you all read, the Cura in Deus Homo. I'm sure you're familiar with Cura in Deus Homo. Why Did God Become Man? You've never heard that book by Anselm, St. Anselm? Well, Anselm reminds the reader, the student, that he says, "You have not considered the seriousness of sin." You haven't considered the seriousness of sin, he says. And if any of you have taken the Ignatian exercises, then you will know that you have to spend a lot of time thinking about and contemplating sin in your life and the seriousness of sin. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because it's the seriousness of sin that is lurking behind the background of the story that you just heard me preach to you that's in the gospel. That's what's behind it. That's what's behind the story of this woman, of Jesus and Simon, is the seriousness of sin. And I'll explain that. One of my mentors, spiritual mentors, over the years, and I had the pleasure of meeting and being with, Brother David Stendel Rast, he thinks that the word sin, it no longer communicates a serious negative condition with serious consequences. So David suggests that we use the word alienation. I like that. Alienation, he says, is our contemporary word that makes sense to us today. We know what alienation is in our life, and we know what it feels like to be cut off from everything, from ourselves, from anything that has meaning, from others, from ultimate reality, and from God. We know what alienation is. Or we should. And so other thinkers, or thought thinkers, that I read, they like the word, rather than sin, they prefer the word separateness. Separateness. It carries the connotation of being cut off, being isolated, being radically alone, separateness. Separate from others, we're separate from God, we're separate from creation. So they live like that. But then there's one other. Her name is, and I'm not quite sure I'm saying her name correctly, Dorothy Soleil. She's a spiritual writer. Anyways, Dorothy, she likes the image of freezing for sin. She says sin is the ice age, the slow advance of cold, a freezing process which we experience and we try to forget. It is the absence of warmth, love, caring, trust. It is the destruction of our capacity for relatedness. It means being separated from the ground of life, having a disturbed relationship to ourselves, our neighbor, our creation, and the human family. Each one of those words, alienation, separateness, freezing, expresses with its own nuances what St. Augustine said about sin. Augustine said, a person in sin is curvius esse, curvatus esse, one who is bent over, who's bent over the top of oneself or herself. That's what it means, to be bent over, on top of oneself. Christian faith thinks that this alienation, this alienated condition of ours is so pervasive that it's original. We call it original sin. Although it does not destroy the good of creation and God's creation, it is coextensive with it. And we see that in history, don't we? It affects everyone. Sin affects everyone. There's no such thing as a private sin. Whatever you do affects others, even in your privacy. And we're going to do a baptism. And in the baptism rite, there's this prayer. And when I say it, I've never said it out loud to the people who are having the child baptized. But the prayer goes something like this. See to it that the divine life that this child is receiving from God today is kept safe from the poison of sin. I don't say it out loud, but I say, good luck. It's not going to happen. Because sin is pervasive everywhere. The fact that sin is pervasive is part of the camouflage of it. It's taken as normal life. Hey, it's just the things we do. Hey, we're just human. Don't forget it. You know? Yeah. We don't take sin seriously anymore. Since it is present everywhere, it's difficult to see it anywhere. So this is why the Pharisees in the gospel today, they don't see their alienation, their separateness, or their frozen life. Although Simon is bent over in conversation with himself and the other Pharisees, they talk only among themselves, their relational poverty doesn't dawn on them. They don't know their own relational poverty, and neither do we, to tell you the truth. However, when a flowing, belonging person who is in communion with God and neighbor breaks into human life, then sin's cover is blown. And in that free life of this one person, the prisons of others are exposed. So theologically put, what I'm trying to say is in the presence of grace, sin is clearly seen. In this sense, Jesus never ever badgered people to repent. He never did. People repented. They simply repented because they found themselves in the presence of somebody who was so good and so accepting and loving, and they wanted to participate in the flow of his being and the life that he was offering. So they changed because they saw that they could see and do things differently in his presence. He liberated them. It is also this sense that Jesus held up the overflowing life of this woman as a mirror to Simon. You see, in Simon, look, this is what you could be. Look at the love she has. She has been forgiven so much. Look at the love she has now. And you, with so little love, this is what you could be. You could be more loving like her. He wanted to lead Simon to decision's edge. Jesus is not a sad and angry prophet. His is an invitation to fullness, abundance of life. So, in the end, the seriousness of sin is that it teaches us to believe a lie about ourselves. And then we believe the lie about ourselves, and we defend that lie against the revelation of the truth. It tells us this lie that we are separate from one another, that we are alienated and isolated individuals with scarce resources in this world and meager means, and we need to oppress others in order for us to live. That's a lie, and we're living that lie all the time. But when we turn from the lie and we find we're not separate from one another, we find ourselves then to be extravagant lovers of God and neighbor. This is what happened to that woman in the story. It's what happens when, in most of the lies that we see who encounter Jesus in the Gospels. It doesn't happen to everybody, because everybody has a choice. Love is a free choice. Love, his love and acceptance of them and her as a child of God, and not seeing her as a sinner, is what changed her and transformed her. And that's what transforms us. So love empowers us, and it raises our consciousness. And once we know we're loved, we can't do certain things that we used to do before when we were unconscious. Because sin is unconsciousness. That's what I think it is anyways. It's lack of being evolved consciously. When you become evolved consciously and become more aware, you don't sin anymore, because you see that it's all one and you're hurting yourself, not just somebody else. So we become channels of love. We're not the origin, we're just the channel. And when we give up sin, that is when we give up separateness for communion, when we give up alienation for belonging, when we give up our frozenness for flow, then we're living a life greater than our own, a life that's not even our own. And then you know it. You know that it's God doing it in you. God did it in me for 30 years, and I didn't even know it. So are people changed for the better because you are alive? Because of your presence in people's lives, are they more free, feel more loved? I'm sure they are.